It's time for Mac Geek Gab, and listener Jim brings us our quick tip of the week with, discovered this by accident when I held the wrong modifier and clicked an app in the dock. Command click an app in the dock and a finder window will open with the location of an application, selecting the app you clicked on. Most of us keep all of our apps in the applications folder, so this is probably of limited utility, but it's a hair faster than right-clicking and selecting Show and Finder from the options menu. More tips like this, plus your questions answered today on Mac Geek Gab 1048 for Monday, July 29th, 2024.
Welcome to Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in tips like that. We share them. You send in cool stuff found. We share them. You send in questions. We answer them. Or at least we discuss them and maybe share what our troubleshooting method would be. The goal being every single one of us learns at least five new things every single time we come together. Our sponsor for this episode is fastmail.com/MGG. That's where you can go to try it for free for 30 days, and then get 10% off your first year. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. For now, here, back here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in South Dakota, I'm Adam Christensen.
And here also in New Hampshire is Pilot Pete. And right before the show, Adam brought up a great technical term, a hair faster. And it can go either way. It could be H-A-R-E or H-A-I-R.
Really?
They're both fast. One's fast and one's a little bit. So
one's a little bit. That's true. Yeah. And today
a few microns.
Today, the 29th, is National Lasagna Day. And Adam, I know that's one of your favorite foods. Yeah. So there you go. Yep.
Oh, the 29th, though.
The 29th. Yeah.
I get mixed up because it's my birthday. And my wife had asked me what I wanted to eat for my birthday. We've already decided on dinner, so I'm not going to change it on her.
Yeah.
But I would have done lasagna.
You could maybe have lasagna on Monday. We record this on Friday, which is Adam's birthday. Happy birthday, Adam. And then you get to sort of re-celebrate again on the day the show's released for National Lasagna Day. So there you go.
Yep. There you go. And I'd hit you with a call sign.
Yep, that's what I'm having Monday.
There you go. And if I had known, I'd have hit you with a call sign, Garfield.
Oh, there it is.
I was actually a huge Garfield fan as a kid. You know, that was back when you had the ones that you could stick on your window.
Right.
So I definitely had one of those in my car, you know, where it was slapped to the back window.
Yeah.
With the suction cups.
That's great.
Gonna date myself.
And then the other one was those two. That one, Calvin and Hobbes. All right, let's move on from our conversation.
Are we moving on?
Yeah, we should do that.
Go, let's do it.
People didn't come to hear about my cartoon likes.
Let's assume that's correct.
That's correct. Yeah. All right. Jose writes in. He says, I drive a lot for work, and I use alarms on my iMac to alert me when it's time to leave. However, alarms do not display a countdown the way timers do. Timers, however, require you to do the math for a specific departure time. For example, if it's currently 9:08 a.m. and I have to leave at 12:45 p.m., that's too much brain work, especially while I'm trying to rush to get work done. I wondered if the Siri assistant would figure this out, so I asked, set a timer that will go off at 12:45 p.m. The math was done for me, and the timer was set for the departure at the appropriate time. I got both the visible countdown on my screen and the alert at the desired time of 12:45 p.m. Problem solved. And just a reminder, here's another quick tip within a quick tip, that type to Siri can be used in environments where others are working around you, which is more common these days. So that feature can be found under accessibility. There you go, Allison. on the Mac, the iPad, and the iPhone. Also, I did some tests on my phone in prepping for this email saying Siri in the middle of a sentence does not seem to activate Siri. That's why I'm saying it instead of S Lady. It seems only to activate when used at the end of a sentence or when there is a pause afterwards. In settings, I have selected listen for Siri or Hey Siri, and that's how he gets it done. So
that's great.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Jose.
Cool. So I love that idea.
That's cool to know.
Of the timer map.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Yeah, I didn't know that. No, yeah. I would have never thought to even try.
Yeah. No. And I like that you don't have to say S lady in the middle of a sentence to keep from.
Oh, well, I'm guessing that you've activated someone's S lady by doing that, Pete. Yeah. I think we probably here on this show, we might want to stick with the with the convention.
Well, that's probably not too a bad idea, but what drives me nuts is when I go, seriously?
Oh, yeah.
And there you just set someone up anyway. Too.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, for sure. Yep.
Yeah, I've generally found the training thing, at least in my house, works most of the time. I rarely get false positives when I'm listening to podcasts or things come up, but it still does happen. It's not perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, it's imperfect. We went down to Massachusetts and Connecticut and saw a bunch of concerts, and driving back yesterday, I couldn't. In fact, the whole time the S lady was not being my friend. For half of the drive down, it wouldn't. This happened to us when we were in Tennessee for 5 minutes, Pete, driving the mm-hmm. crew car, where I was waiting for directions and the S lady would just chime as though there was like music play. Yeah. It did it again to me where instead of telling me the directions, it just chimes. And it's like, better look at the screen, buddy. Otherwise you don't know where you're going. And I don't know why it started doing that. And then on the way home yesterday, I asked it for something and it was like, sorry, there's a problem. It's like, yeah, okay, great. And what I realized was, even though I had 5 bars of 5G on a highway in America, there was no data connection happening. And I had to turn my phone into airplane mode and then back out of airplane mode. And suddenly, like, all these notifications came in and all this stuff.
Bing, 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 bing.
Yeah. Why can't my phone auto heal in those scenarios? It knows the same information I do, that it can't get a data connection and yet it should be able to get one. Why can't it do the let me reset myself in those scenarios?
I suspect that the engineers don't want that to happen because it might falsely break your connection when you need it not to. Just a guess.
I'm blaming karma or solar flares or something this week, because between the, CloudStrike or whatever it was called, and then like weird junk has been happening this week. You know, UPS had a massive outage yesterday. QuickBooks had a massive outage yesterday. My phone's doing this thing this week where I'll open a Safari browser and I get a white blank window for like a new tab, and none of my searches work. Nothing works, and I've had to hard reboot my phone to get it to come back. Whoa. And I've had to do it twice this week.
Yep.
And it's just random. It's never done that before, and just suddenly. So I don't know. Weird mystery week.
So
cosmic rays or something.
I took my experiences with my phone's unreliability as a sign that I should install the iOS 18. And watch 11 betas on my devices. So I am now running those on my, I figured if it's going to be like this, I might as well start playing with the new features. So I have now.
I was going to mention, although I have CarPlay in my truck now, I do wear my, you may not have been wearing your Apple Watch. Or were you?
I was wearing my Apple Watch on this trip.
I noticed.
Yeah.
I do. When you have maps up, it taps you on the wrist and you can just look at your wrist and go, oh, that's
coming. Not mine. I don't like it tapping me while I'm driving. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is a thing you can turn off in, I believe it's settings maps on your phone. Yeah. And so, well, now it's settings apps maps because they've buried all that stuff there, which
I further down
one
further down
one more tap away. But let's see, is there preferred type of spoken directions, climb and map levels, watch? I don't know, it's somewhere. Maybe it's in settings,
maybe it's in the watch app.
I bet
it is,
right.
I'll look for it while Adam goes to the next quick tip.
I think I'll take us to the next quick tip, but it's okay,
or somebody will.
I'm not up
actually,
yet.
I can't. My phone's my camera.
No, I'll take it to take us to Badger, which is a fascinating discussion that happened in our Discord. Badger writes, I sent in an original 9.7-inch iPad Pro for trade-in to Apple. And after they got it, the value was, they told me it was going to be $65. And after they got it, the value was reduced to zero due to, quote, LCD display burn-in damage / streak / discoloration across the screen, quotes. Badger continues, I'd never noticed any issues, and I had been using two iPads side by side for some time, plus a few days with my new iPad Air M2. I rejected Apple's new $0 value and had it returned. The only issues I saw on return were fingerprints from Apple's handling. I cleaned it up and tested it by taking photos, the camera being more sensitive than the eye to subtle changes. Oh, nice. Yep. With white, red, green, and blue screens, not seeing any damage, streaks, discoloration issues. So here is the quick tip. Badger says, I took it into the Apple Store for evaluation, and I received the $65 trade-in that was originally offered. So if you don't like Apple's mail-in trade value or trade revaluation, then bring it to an Apple store and they will do a trade valuation there for you too. And this way it's a human doing it in front of you. So they need to be able to tell you with a straight face and point to the problem that they are seeing as opposed to just somebody checking
or
a box.
Or you get to wave the BS flag.
Yes, right. Yeah. You get to throw the flag. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Nice try, but no.
Nice try. Yeah, exactly.
That is a great tip probably for someone like me and maybe some other people. The $65 is probably not worth the 4-hour drive.
That's fair.
Well, there's that.
That's fair. Well, now you're bringing logic into the equation when justice is what matters.
True.
Yes. True. Justice trumps logic. Yes.
I just wonder what happens when I take my work iPad in for trade-in.
Don't
I bet I get to buy my company a new iPad.
I did a stupid thing once. I had an Apple loaner iPad, or maybe it was an iPhone. Either way, it doesn't matter. You know, they send you these things sometimes to test, not so much anymore, but and I had one, and I had it so long I forgot it was theirs, and I actually took it in and paid for a repair on it. And then like a year and a half later, they're like, hey, can we have that back? And I'm like, yes, you can have it back. Yep.
And by the way, it's fixed. You're welcome.
And it's fixed. Right. Yep. Sure did. I sure did. Yeah. That felt really good that day. Anyway.
All right. I got something from Andrew here. Yeah. Andrew says, starting with Mac OS 14, aka Sonoma, open windows hide when I click the desktop. This was driving me bonkers. A bit of Google Foo solved the problem. If you want to turn this off, you can head to System Settings, go to Desktop and Dock, rather, and scroll down to find Click Wallpaper to Reveal Desktop option. Set this to Only in Stage Manager instead of New. The new default of always. Yeah. This one, when Sonoma hit and my company upgraded, there were so many angry people about this feature. I don't know why it's on by default. I left it on just because I wanted to learn kind of the new thing, and it hasn't bothered me too much. Every once in a while I'll have a misclick. But yeah, if it's driving you crazy, good. That's a good tip.
It is. And I'm looking here. This came from our Discord. And I will find the thread and link to it, because someone, and I can't off the top of my head, I can't remember who, wrote an Apple script to go and just do this. So you don't even have, you can just run this as part of your, I'm setting up a new Mac thing, and off you go. So pretty good stuff. I like it. I still have it on mine occasionally. Yep. I don't know if I actually like it. I know I occasionally do it. This might be a thing to turn off.
I don't know how useful it is. I've for forever used the spotlight key, you know, or whatever, not spotlight key. What do you call it? The
Oh, the thing at the top, F3 or whatever it is. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it's Command F3. Does exactly the same thing. If you're using...
Mission Control.
I can't even remember what that was called. Is it Mission Control?
I think so.
Yeah, the thing that has all the different options. And I can't remember what it's...
We're going to call it Mission Control for now, even if we're wrong. How's that sound?
I think that's right. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
All right. great. And thank you, Brian, for giving me the link, so that I can put that in the link to the Discord chat. So I can put that in the show notes and I can thank the person who did it. It was Tennessee Papa who, wrote the little, actually it was a shell script, not an Apple script, but, regardless of that, it works just the same. So yeah.
Yeah. And Dave, you're right. It is Mission Control.
Sweet.
It's the Mission Control shortcuts.
Sweet.
Right.
Yep. Yes, right, right, right. All right, shall we go, Pete?
How about Jim? I go to Jim?
Let's do it.
Yeah. So Jim writes in, and thank you, Jim, for confusing us pre-show, but we got it worked out. He writes, Dave, Pete, and Adam, this counts as a G. That is a helpful quick tip. If you do a search in Spotlight for a file, the dialog appears that allows you to click on the file to open it. I finally discovered how to see where the file is. Hold down the command key. The preview icon changes to the finder icon, and the dialog shows the path to the file. Clicking on the file then opens the folder. I can't tell you how long I've been grumbling about this because it would be too embarrassing. So we'll just guess that it's been a long time, Jim. Thanks for all you do. Signed, Jim. So... we were looking for it in Finder search, not Spotlight search. So that's important. Spotlight search is key. Then you hold down the command key. So
yeah, I also want to point out, it seems to be, at least for me, only the top result. If the top result is like an app or a folder, it's only the first result.
Mm. Okay. Okay. But because initially he had said a Finder search, I was looking around and playing around in Finder, and I wanted to bring up to folks, no longer talking about Spotlight, we're talking about Finder now. In Finder, if you highlight a file and hold the Option key and right click on it, you can then see one of your menu items that comes up is Copy Path to Clipboard, and so you'll get the path to the file. You can then paste it in Terminal or wherever you might need to paste it. That's how you get the path to where that file is. The other way to always see where a given file is in Finder, you go to the View menu and you will see Show Path Bar in Finder, or if you have it already shown, Hide Path Bar in Finder, or Option Command P is your keyboard shortcut in Finder to get that little path bar at the bottom of your Finder window to show you where each file is residing upon thy hard drive.
Yeah, I have that on, well, not by default, because it's not by default.
But all the time, if you want to know where that is, always.
I want to know where it is, always. I always want that at the bottom of my Finder thing. And in that little path bar, you can click on folders there to go to them in the little breadcrumbs. Yeah. So you can, like, if your thing is, you know, four folders deep, you can click on any one of those folders and it'll just bring you there in the little path bar. So,
yeah. Yep. Okay, I got to back up now because in comments on YouTube, George asks, isn't that expose?
Oh.
Still Mission Control?
George, it's we decided expose. It was called Mission Control no matter what, whether that was correct or not.
George, you're okay. Wrong. You're wrong, George.
George is just also correct.
Well, hold on. I will tell you this. Maybe that's what it was called. I think he's right in terms of that's what it was called originally. Currently in macOS, what are we on now? Sonoma?
15.
Sayonara.
Oh, wait, no, what are we on? We're on 14. Sorry, we're on 14. Yes.
Yeah, Sonoma. So currently in macOS Sonoma, when I go to settings or system settings, what are we calling it now? System settings, desktop and dock, and scroll all the way down, those settings are under the section called Mission Control.
Here's something interesting. I searched in settings for expose and desktop and dock came up. So the metadata, the you know, somebody has tagged this as expose. Yeah. Yeah.
Just don't search for expose in Google. You may not like your results.
Yeah. Maybe that's why they changed it. You know, should I expose my Mac or should I mission control it? I don't know. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They've got everything screwy. Because, like, again, I think some of the settings for spaces are in here. So I don't know. I guess maybe all that stuff is maybe it's expose, but it's part of mission control.
Right. Oh, yeah. Could be. Yeah. 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 Could be. Could be. In going, if we're going to go back in time here, the clicking on the desktop hides everything but your wallpaper thing. I wish I could have that be a command click so that it doesn't happen accidentally. But if I could command click on my desktop and have it all go away, like, I'll take that. And you know what? There's probably a way to wriggle that up.
You probably
can. Yeah. Now that I'm thinking about it. I'm not going to think too hard. RN Doug says, I came across this tip on Mastodon. If you double tap and hold on a map, you can zoom in and out by sliding your finger or thumb up and down on the screen. So this is on your iPhone. You double tap and then hold on the map. And then you have zoom controls with one hand, really one finger or one thumb. This works for Apple Maps, Google Maps, My Radar, and even the map in Apple Weather. So it's possible that it works on any app that has maps. So this is clearly part of the Apple map displaying framework that, you know, is inherited by lots and lots of different apps. Also, the point of the double tap is where the zoom will be centered, which is kind of cool. You can also just do a double tap and the map will zoom in a bit. I think that one is more commonly known. Also, I just today realized that you can double tap a zoomed Safari page to quickly return to the default magnification level. Thank you for all those tips, Aaron Doug. That's love that. Love it.
Love tip it. Within a tip within a tip.
A tip within a tip within a tip. Yep. Just don't expose just your tips. Faster.
All right. Should I wrap quick tips up with Mark?
Please.
Please do so.
Please.
Mark says, I often have many tabs open in Safari and often with a YouTube video playing. If I get a phone call or I need to mute the sound on the video, I used to have to find the tab to stop the sound. I just noticed if you click on the little blue speaker in the address bar, it will mute the sound regardless of what tab is open. Hope this saves everyone a few mouse clicks and movement. Yeah, that's a handy tip for sure.
Yep.
I often forget that that's there, but yeah, if you're playing a YouTube video in a tab, you will see that little icon in your bar in Safari.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of those that I forget about it all the time, but yes.
Helps you locate which one it is too.
I also wish
which one is playing.
I'm torn on this. Do you guys have your phone calls ring on your Mac?
I do,
but I probably should turn it off because I never. Well, I like to use that feature to dismiss phone calls, like spam calls, because that way I don't have to pick up my phone. And especially it's more handy now that I use my phone as my camera through Continuity Camera.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So often I can't get to my phone, which is ringing. So now it's handy to just do it there.
Yeah.
And I can see who's calling and all those other things.
I do have it ring on my Mac. It gets in the way. Sometimes I like to initiate an outbound call from my Mac, which is why I leave that feature on, because if I turned it off, then I couldn't do that, I don't think. Although I should test that theory. Maybe I don't know. But I have it on, but it's always there's always so much going on. It's like, well, I want to pause my music, but now the pause controls don't work because the phone ringing thing is modal and it's a whole thing. And it's like, no, I'm going to answer on my phone, but I want to pause on my Mac, but I can't pause music on my Mac right now because otherwise it'll answer on my Mac and that's not what I want. And it's
right.
always a thing.
Right.
Wait,
so
you
real
can't...
quick. Go ahead.
So again, for all of these things, like I was thinking like the mute thing and now you're mentioning the pause thing. Do you guys not use your keyboard?
That's what I'm saying. My keyboard, when there is a call coming in on my Mac, if I hit the play pause button on my keyboard, it
F8.
Does, Yeah, the F8 thing. It does not pause my music. And this could be related to the third-party keyboard that I have. I'm not sure, but it's always this, like, now I have to go into this weird, like, 14-step mode. It's like, okay, well, if I dismiss the call, no. So I have to answer the call first and then very quickly, like, start clicking so that people can't hear, you know, whatever I'm listening to is, like, the call begins. Not that that's a terrible thing or anything, but, you know, it's like, I don't know. It's a whole thing. So,
My other question, Dave, was you said you like to initiate calls on your Mac sometimes. Do you use contacts to do that? Is that how you do it? Or is it a different way?
Yeah, I'll use contacts or I'll just launch the FaceTime app and initiate a call from there. Yep. But I need to test because, like, I always assumed, but now that we're having this conversation, I may have assumed incorrectly that feature that lets you turn on calls on your Mac, which is what's it called? It's
part of continuity, right?
Calls on other devices. Allow calls on other devices. It's in settings, phone, calls on other devices, and you can allow calls on, and then it lists all of your devices, and you choose which ones you want to allow it on. But the way it's described is, I believe that if I turn that off, I can't even initiate calls on those devices, but I could be wrong. Because it says use your iPhone cellular account to make and receive calls on devices signed into iCloud, and then you have, you know, the little thing. So I guess I just need to test it. I need to turn that off for one of my Macs and then try and initiate a call with it. And if that works, then that's what I'll leave it on. But the description says that won't work. That's not always the case, is it? So, you know.
Yep.
All right, folks. Have you ever felt like your inbox is a carnival of ads and creepy data trackers? Don't get caught with the clowns. Switch to our sponsor, Fastmail. I've been using Fastmail as my primary email for over 5 years, and it has been fantastic. Fastmail is an independent, employee-owned email provider offering a premium inbox experience without any of those ads or data sharing shenanigans. Just a clean interface with features that actually value your time. For as little as $5 a month, you get a private inbox that's like a secret lair for your emails. And guess what? Fastmail's new multi-user plans make it affordable for your entire household or your business. Whether you're setting up with a partner or upgrading the whole family, Fastmail has got you covered. You can even share custom domains and create private or shared calendars and address books. Customize your email workflow with colors, custom swipes, and night mode. It's like giving your inbox a superhero makeover. Fastmail also features scheduled send, snooze, and folders to keep you organized. Don't get caught in the email dark ages, folks. Make email better for you with Fastmail. Try Fastmail free for 30 days and then get 10% off your first year at www.fastmail.com/MGG. Again, try for free for 30 days and get 10% off your first year at www.fastmail.com/MGG. Your inbox will thank you, and I'm going to thank Fastmail. Thanks, Fastmail, for sponsoring this episode.
So Adam has a question for gentlemen, but I think we can try to answer this one anyway.
We'll try. Yes.
Okay. He says, gentlemen, I have an odd issue. Maybe you can help me out. I have a Plex server on a 2013 Mac Pro running Mac OS Monterey. Overkill, I know, but it's what I have. The library and its backups reside on a number of external USB drives. I recently moved a fair amount of files, 4 to 5 terabytes or so, from one drive to the other drives, but the source drive's free space indication hasn't changed. There was 354 gigabytes free when I started moving files off, and as shown in the attached screenshot, you can see that 12 terabyte red drive with just over 6 terabytes of files on it reports the same 354 gigabytes free. I've exposed hidden files, but I don't see any evidence of the files I deleted or anything else taking up that space. I don't want to test the drive by dragging 400 gigabytes of files from one drive to the other, nor do I have 6 terabytes of free space to copy the files over to allow me to reformat it and copy them back. Other programs like Disk Inventory X report the same. Any thoughts on how I can get the Finder to display the correct amount of free space?
Yeah, my guess is that this is yet again snapshots, the APFS snapshots coming into play. The good news is that Disk Utility now will show these to you and let you manage them. Carbon Copy Cloner will also do it. Carbon Copy Cloner was the first app that let us do this, and then eventually they added the functionality to Disk Utility. But if you launch Disk Utility and go to a volume, it will show you, at the top, it shows you, the disk icon and the name of the disk and the size and, how much space is free and all that stuff. And then at the bottom, it will list APFS snapshots. Give it a minute for this list to populate. It will appear blank at first, and it'll have a little churning thing that's not super obvious, but it's churning. And then once it comes up, you can sort these by, generally, I would say sort by size, and you can click on them and manage them, including deleting them from here. That's probably what it is. And my guess is the way it's supposed to work is if you were to put more stuff on there, it would expire out those snapshots over time and not really use that space. I know why the Finder is reporting it the way that it is. I wonder if the Finder should either report free space plus the space being used for snapshots because that is purgeable, or if it should report two figures. There's actually this amount, but here's the amount taken up by snapshots. I don't know. The time that it takes for it to calculate the snapshots when you launch Disk Utility is the same amount of time it would take for it to calculate that. So maybe that's why they're not doing it. But
doesn't if you do a git info on a hard drive, doesn't it give you the available space and then in next to it show how much is purgeable?
I would believe you if I were inclined to do such a thing, but I don't.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. I just looked at my hard drive. So my hard drive says 196.1 gigabytes available, 154.04 purgeable.
Huh.
Well, that's available, not used.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm wrong. I am. Maybe that's a different number.
I don't know. I'm looking here. Yeah, I am seeing 41.41 purgeable on mine.
But that's available. So
yeah,
that's maybe something different.
I'm going to launch Disk Utility at the risk of breaking everything. I'm looking here, and if I look at the data volume, wait, why am I not seeing? Now I'm not seeing this in Disk Utility on this computer. I'm not getting to see all of my snapshots. Is there something that I've done on my other computer? Show APFS snapshots. Ah, so an important thing. This is not turned on by default. When you launch Disk Utility, you need to go to the View menu and choose Show APFS Snapshots. Otherwise, I lied. It won't show them to you. If I'm adding things up here, what did I say? 41.41 purgeable. My snapshots on this are taking up 6, 9, 11, maybe 12 gigs. So I don't know what that 41.41 purgeable means. But that's fun.
So this is another thing that came up on my show quite a bit, where people would get really concerned about available space. And I get why, right? It makes sense. Like, you want to know how much free space do I actually have available on my drive, right? But at the end of the day, does it, that space is available, right? it can be used regardless of whether the finder's showing it or not, right?
Yes.
Like, those snapshots aren't going to, like, prevent you from using that available free space that you have.
No, it will purge them, theory, as long as everything's working the way that it's supposed to. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's annoying that we don't have a good view into this. I agree with that. Okay. But at the same time, it's like, this is another one of those things. I don't know. I think maybe it's come with age. Like, I've just gotten to the thing like, okay, Apple just does weird stuff. And as long as I can store my stuff and I'm not getting an out of disk storage space message, I really don't care.
You just trust it. And there is some discussion in our live Discord chat that this may not be available in Disk Utility in Monterey. And I believe that's correct. I think which is what is being run on Adam's on Mac his Pro
machine.
Yeah. So Carbon Copy Cloner would be the utility to see these then for that. I don't know that there was any other utility that showed these to us. I mean, you can do it with the command line. I know the Disk Util from the command line will show them to you, but that's more trouble than it's worth.
Clean my Mac?
Possibly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know
if Daisy Disk or any of those utilities then too, but no.
Yeah. Go ahead, Pete.
So you're saying it will delete that snapshot as necessary to give you the space, or it should. Is it safe to delete those snapshots?
Yeah. I've done it before where I've manually deleted snapshots. The question is, well, you know, will you want whatever data it is you're about to delete in the future? And I, you know, that's like for the listener to decide, you know? Yeah,
exactly. Hey, one other thought came to mind when I first started reading this. He was talking about it being a USB drive. And before I even got to the rest of the question, I went, oh, I know what the problem is. Of course, it wasn't, had nothing to do with it. But a reminder to folks, if you delete a file on a thumb drive, or a SD card, or a USB drive, if you don't empty the trash, macOS does not free up that space for you. It's sitting there in the trash, ready to go. So
yes, yes.
So
yes.
So empty your trash, which takes us to I should have done that right before the cool stuff found in the show.
Yeah. You're right. Emptying the trash is a good one. Go ahead.
Yeah, and again, Clean My Mac X will let you empty all of your trash bins. It has a bunch of maintenance utilities, and I just checked, including one of their maintenance utilities is free up purgeable space, but I think that will only be your main drive. I'm not sure it'll do, like, externals. What's happening in this case?
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I'm not positive, but...
Yeah, right.
Because I only have one drive on my thing right now, but...
Got it. Gary chimed in on a conversation we were having in Mac Geek Up 1045 about whether or not 8 gigs is enough unified memory on today's Apple Silicon Macs. And Gary says, I have to comment, for people using a DSLR camera and Adobe products, the answer is that 8 gigs is not enough. Especially if your camera is making you money, the ROI on an upgrade will be weeks, if not days. I'm no longer a pro, but I still frequently use my DSLR and Lightroom and Photoshop. About 18 months ago, I replaced my 2014 iMac with an M2 Mac Mini with 8 gigs of unified memory. Foolishly, I ignored a fundamental photography truth, which is you can never have enough RAM to satisfy Adobe's software. Things were good at first, but as Adobe has introduced more AI features, which are amazing, the software has gotten even more RAM hungry. With just 8 gigs of RAM, simply scrolling through pictures in Lightroom was frustratingly slow. Eventually, I found myself shutting down all my other software, rebooting, and then starting the Adobe apps. Rinse and repeat every time I wanted to do any photo editing. Finally, a few months ago, the CFO said I could throw money at the problem. I sold the 8 gig mini and replaced it with a 24 gig mini, and all is well. My boss said that her ROI is that I've stopped complaining. or the CFO said that her ROI is that I've stopped complaining. Right. So that this is interesting to hear, because most of the comments that we've gotten about this are, yeah, I have 8 gigs on my whatever, and it's totally fine. I never even noticed that it's an issue. Interesting that at least Adobe software is wanting more real RAM than whatever virtualized scenario would be necessary.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue if you're using Photoshop or Lightroom or any what I would consider to be pro level app, and I think we did talk about that, even if you're a casual consumer, right? Yeah. Then yeah, that holds true. I mean, you're in essence a consumer pro or pro, and you're probably going to care more about that stuff. I think the caveat on the 8 gigs is if you're just doing regular stuff and occasionally editing your, you know, family vacation photos in something real light, you're doing light editing, not heavy, you know, like that sort of thing, you're going to be fine. But yeah, this is a great point for Gary to bring up, especially I love that comment, you know, if you rely on it to make money, absolutely. You should be spending the money for the best tools. I mean, that's a general argument across the board, whatever you do in life.
Yeah.
If you're earning a living off it, like when you're a podcaster, right? And you kind of level up, you start with something, some gear, and you can get in really, really cheap. But once you get to a certain point, you know, you're spending hundreds of dollars on maybe a microphone, you're spending, and you will get that value immediately back.
Yep.
Right. So right tools, right job. I mean, this is just across the board. So yeah, absolutely. If you're earning a living off of it, or it's really important to you, yeah, you should be getting the best tools you can get. Always. Always.
Always. Yeah, yeah. Yep. Yep. All right. Shall we move on to Scott here, Pete?
We shall do so at this time. Scott writes in, I am looking for Bluetooth speakers with a particular set of features, and maybe you can point me in the right direction. This will be used in a camper van that is very well insulated. Most of the walls and the ceiling are sound-absorbing cloth over foam over wood insulate. To be used for audiobooks, podcasts, and quiet music like classical jazz. Doesn't need to be big volume. Does need clear sound when quiet. Does not need huge bass. And we would like to keep the cost under $100. The other characteristics are what is hard to search for and are not optional. Needs to be USB rechargeable, table stakes, but also needs to be a hard off switch and or the ability to play when the battery is dead when plugged into USB power, because it will be used very intermittently and stored for weeks at a time. Bonus for USB-C. Needs to be easily paired with either of two phones without having to do any complicated steps to switch between them. The girlfriend just wants to be able to connect it and play it, her yoga podcasts, even if I was playing something from my phone the night before. Bonus if it has a hard jack for the old iPod that we have. And if the girlfriend's not listening to Mac Geek Gab, I say don't get her a speaker.
Wow, this got dark fast. Wow. All right.
You know, everybody should be listening to us.
I agree.
Just ask us.
We just share it, though. Maybe play this while she's doing the yoga and see how that works out for you. The speaker. No, don't do that.
Yeah. No, get a speaker with soft padding on it. So when it bounces off your head.
Yeah, fair. I travel with a JBL Flip 6, and older versions of the Flip also work great. It does charge with USB-C. This retails, it's a little out of your, stated under $100 range, at least on the retail price. It retails for $130. But occasionally it appears lower than that. I've seen it in that 99 range from time to time. It can totally fill a room with sound, and I think it checks all your boxes. I easily moved it. I was just using it this past week because we were traveling, and I move it between my iPhone, my iPad, and my MacBook Air with ease. I just press the Bluetooth button on it and choose it. And sometimes I don't even have to do that. I just choose it from my device. I think it remembers two devices, if I'm not mistaken, so you can just sort of bounce between two things really easily. As far as whether or not it will play with a dead battery when USB power is applied, I don't know the answer to that question, but I do know the answer to your concern, and it is that you will not have a concern. The only time I use this speaker is for travel. And so that means it not only goes weeks at a time, it goes months at a time without being plugged in or turned on. And I just grab it and throw it in my suitcase and off I go. And then I turn it on in the room. I think I used it in my room at MaxDoc. I definitely didn't charge it there. I plugged it in or not. I turned it on this week when Lisa and I were down in Connecticut. It's like we were unpacking and stuff just to get some music going. And it was after that that I looked. It's got like a little, you know, meter on the side about the battery level. And it was like, it's down to like, looks like maybe 30%. I'll plug it in. And I did. But that might be the first time that I've plugged it in 6 or 8 months. So it holds a charge for a very long time. So it sounds great that the JBL speakers, and they aren't, their sound profile is not the super heavy overdone bass or anything like that. It's clear sound. They do have bass radiators in them. The flips do. So you can get like what I would call a well-balanced sound. It doesn't sound tinny. Doesn't sound muddy. It's a well-balanced sound, and it'll fill a room. And then it has party boost mode, or whatever they're calling it now. They keep changing the name of the mode. But where you can take multiple JBL speakers, they don't have to be exactly the same speaker as long as they support the same mode. You can link them together and have sound in sync coming out of various Bluetooth speakers. It's actually pretty cool. So that's what I would... That's what I use, I think it checks all your boxes, Scott.
And I've got one too that I think does come in under the price. Now it may not be as big, but I'm going to turn my background off here so you can show it. I've got a JBL Go 3. There's the other side of it. It's a Go 3.
Yep.
Bluetooth works great on it, and it is USB-C. You can toss it in the swimming pool if you need to. It is nice. Waterproof, so that's kind of cool. It'll lay flat on its back. It'll stand on its side. So it's got rubber on the back, rubber on the bottom. And I got to say, I've been very happy with the sound. I just clip this onto a carabiner on my backpack and travel all over the world with it.
Yep.
And use it that way. And I will add another.
And it's $50 cool bucks on found. Amazon. Yeah.
Yeah. And I had another one that's usually $119. It's occasionally on sale for about $60 at Best Buy. It's about the size of a softball. Boom something, maybe.
Okay. Yep.
I don't remember it, and I can't find it. I misplaced it in the move, and it hasn't resurfaced yet.
It'll come back. So, yep.
Yeah, when it does, that'll be. But that was also great. But that's a micro USB instead of a USB-C charger. I've been very happy with this. I use this even in the cockpit when we've got a long turn of an hour or more and nothing to do.
Yep.
I'll throw this up on the dashboard, and way the window works and the sound echoes off or comes off the window and focuses it into the flight deck. It's really nice sound.
Oh, nice.
And I always ask the guys I'm with, who you like rock or country, and there's my other cool stuff found here. I use Sirius XM for... It's the top 1,000 classic rock and the top 1,000 country songs, and they just start count from 1,000 down to 1 over and over and over again. They keep going. So it's a great commercial free station, and for $5 or $6 a month, you can get your Sirius subscription and play your music all over the world.
Nice.
But that's...
Yeah.
Sorry. Took you down a rabbit hole that we didn't plan on.
one feature, just I didn't see it on that one, Pete, that I know was mentioned. Does it have the... three and a half inch aux? No, that one doesn't, right?
Neither this one of these do the I think that's the difference between being waterproof and not is
sure
the aux jack. Yeah. Or the lack thereof.
While he didn't ask for waterproof, that's a key extra feature.
Especially
if it's going to be in a camper. But the battery life on this is also amazing. I think I probably get 10 or 12 hours out of a charge of playtime.
That's about what they say you should get on both of the speakers we mentioned. Yeah. No, you're right. The Go 3 is also a great sounding speaker. JBL, I've really come to like their sound profile in their sort of portable Bluetooth speakers, especially. They they do it right. They know, like, they have people there that care about what things sound like, and it shows.
Yeah.
So, yep. Hey, last episode. Oh, go ahead, Adam. Did you have something to?
No. I just said cool.
And last episode, we talked about, we shared a note. I believe it was from Jeffrey, who was lamenting that his watch wasn't playing all his songs, and also that even the songs it would play, he could not get it to shuffle. We got notes from so many of you. Thank you. That Apple, in fact, still has the shuffle, repeat, and autoplay controls, and they were relocated in a recent watchOS update. And as listener Chris says, as many of you did, it took me a while to find them. After starting a song, tap the three dots in the upper right corner, then tap playing next. Now you will see the three buttons along the top, shuffle, repeat, and autoplay. That's where these are hidden now. So tap the three dots in the upper right corner that appear while something is playing, then tap playing next. So it's a two-tap thing to get there, and then a third one to choose shuffle or not shuffle. For those, like Chris says, who asked, what is autoplay? That's the functionality where the app adds music to the end of the cue that is similar to what you're currently playing. That's actually really good to know. I don't know that I understood that definition. Thank you for that, Chris, and everybody. Yeah, great stuff.
Yeah. Yep. Would have never found that.
Same. Yeah, and it sounds like lots of people didn't, which is why I love this show. It's awesome. Yep.
Buried UI. All right. Should we wrap up with Nick?
He's got
a question about Mesh 6. Nick says, hello, I'm trying to choose between the Eero Pro 6E Mesh system and the Deco XE 75 Pro, wondering which one you would recommend and whether you have any privacy concerns for either of them.
So, like, easy question to answer because neither one is wrong. They're both fantastic. The price points on them are sort of the first thing to look at, because the three pack of the Deco XE 75 Pros are $300 on Amazon right now, and a three pack of the Eero Pro 6Es are $500 on Amazon right now. And so that kind of makes it, if price is a concern, which I know it is for almost all of us almost all of the time, then the Decos would be certainly ones to consider. I've used both the Eero and the Deco. They both work great. They are fundamentally different approaches to how one's Wi-Fi is managed. Eero is strictly cloud managed. Deco is kind of sort of cloud managed. Like, it can be cloud managed, but it's like it will also talk locally to it in a way that's a little different from the Eero. The biggest reason for the price delta between Eero and Deco is, and has been explained the same, I have gotten the same explanation from both the Eero folks and the TP-Link folks, and it is economies of scale. Well, actually, right now the Eeros are $550, so they're even a little bit more for the three pack of the 6Es. TP-Link makes so many different things, and they have such huge factories that they can build quality stuff at a cost where, you know, their retail price is less than at least at the time this was explained. I don't know if this is still true today, but, you know, 18 months ago when all this was explained to me, the retail cost that you and I would pay for a TP-Link, you know, mesh like this is less than Eero's manufacturing build cost on the ones that they sell, which is why they have to sell them for more than that. So, they're both good. I really, the Eero makes things so easy, but so does the TP-Link. I've always said, you know, if you've heard me talk about mesh in the past, the Eero is always my first recommendation because it's just so easy. And then TP-Link, the Deco is a very, very close number two. So, that's what I got. Yep.
I agree with you. I think almost 100%. It's funny. I locked in on Orbi a while back.
Yes.
But dang, it's expensive. But I love it. yep. too. But I think Euro's kind of that nice balance. So I think it's, I don't think it's as expensive as the Orbi system, right?
It depends. Let's look. I mean, the Orbi always recommends you get one mesh unit less than everyone else. If Eero or TP-Link are saying, you know, you need three for this size home, Netgear will say you need two. Whether that's true or not is a whole thing. But yeah, you're right. A three pack of the Orbi 6E is $1,400 on Amazon. So yeah, very expensive. However,
yeah, exactly.
However, this is all quad band Wi-Fi 6E. So you are getting more when you pay more. When you buy the Orbi, you are getting better Wi-Fi, better and more Wi-Fi radios than you are with the other ones. The rest are tri-band. These are quad band. So there is a difference there that can make a huge difference. If you need to go very long distances of Wi-Fi backhaul, Orbi has always been the one that I go with.
Okay. That's so, probably why, you know, back to our original conversation, when I told you, like, in my office, that's what I use. I use Wi-Fi backhaul, and you were surprised that right. we do our streaming, and I very rarely have issues.
Yeah.
Very rarely.
Yeah, so there you go. So that's the, yep. Yep.
But not cheap.
Fumbling here because you are now reminding me again that we're doing this and relying on long distance Wi-Fi backhaul every time we do the show. But that, like, and that just gives me the heebie-jeebies. However, like, to your point, and I'll knock on wood just because, but it has never been a problem. So, that's maybe. Clearly I don't need to worry about this, but I do anyway. But yeah, no, that's
you do
the
anyway.
I do anyway. But yes, that the Orbis are I don't want to say over-engineered. They are engineered to be what someone in your scenario absolutely needs. Yes.
Yeah. All right.
Sweet.
Should we do cool stuff found?
I do want to do cool stuff found. First, I want to thank all of our premium listeners who have contributed in the last few weeks since we have thanked them for that. So as we always say, and I will say again right now, just listening to, and I say just, I'm going to take the word just out. Listening to the show is an amazing way to support us. And it really is, I will say, the most important one, because without you, there's no point in doing this show. We love doing it. I think that probably shows, but you are what make this show a show. And so please, you know, stay subscribed, keep listening, share the show with your friends, all of those things. Supporting our sponsors is another great way to support the show. And then there is also this way with our Mac Geek Gab Premium, and all of these things really combine to allow us to do this the way that we are able to do it. And we thank you for it. So thanking, and you can learn more about Premium at MacGeekGab.com/Premium. Thanking the following folks for their $10 contributions in the last few weeks. Wagner from Allen, James from Amity Harbor, Gary from Babylon, Scott from Bourbonnais, Jeff from Chesterton, Chris from Chorleywood, Robert from Columbiana, where am I here? Mark from Coopersburg, Barry from Des Plaines, Jeremiah from Edgewater, Kevin from Edison, Paul from Lawrenceville, Joseph from Marietta, Nick from Marquette, Santiago from Palm City, Stephen from Plainfield, Jonathan from Plainsboro, Michael from Robbins, James from San Antonio, Abel from Santa Rosa, John from Vienna, and another John from Wake Forest, and Neil from West Hartford. All of you, thank you for your $10 contributions in the past few weeks. The following people I'd like to thank for their $25 contributions: Jeffrey from Alamogordo, Bruce from Alpharetta, Terrence from Avon Lake, Karen from Chagrin Falls, Jeff from Del Mar, Warren from Fairview, Brian from Fountain Hills, Joe from Kingsley, Walter from Long Island City, Greg from Los Angeles, Michael from Naperville, Mark from New Fairfield, Ronald from Philadelphia, Richard from Quakertown, Deb from San Clement, Jason from St. Louis, Paul from Tunbridge Wells, and Graham from Yelverton. I'm reminded that New Fairfield, Connecticut is where this show was born, or at least where the ideas for it were. I think the first episode was recorded when I lived in New Fairfield right before we moved up here. So thanks to all of you for your $25 contributions. $30 contributions, thanks to Dennis from Chapel Hill, Richard from Pontrug, and Jim from San Jose. A $36 contribution from Ben in Berkeley, thank you. A $40 contribution from David in Lenexa. $60 contributions from both Scott in Calabasas and John in Vivi. Thank you to you both. And then $100 contributions from Ronald in Philadelphia, Mark in Oklahoma City, and Mr. X, who prefers not to be named. Thank you so much to all of you. And again, thank you for being a part of the Mac Geek Gab family. However you may do that, it's amazing that we get to do this. So yeah, fun stuff. All right, take us to Cool Stuff Found, please, Adam.
All right, we got one from Randy, and it's just a playful little thing you can do with your trash. It's called Banana Bin, and bananabin.app. We'll have, obviously, the link in the show notes, but adds a third state to your macOS trash bin, where I think if you leave stuff in there for a while, or maybe, I think it's over time, right? Then it starts adding flies, starts showing up on your, on your trash. Yeah. Reminds me a little bit of the old days when we could do the Grouch, which was my favorite back in macOS, I think it was 6 and 7, where we could actually edit things with like ResEdit and that sort of thing. And somebody made a little app that would put Oscar the Grouch in your trash. He'd pop up, you know, when the trash was full. And then when you emptied it, he would sing his I Love Trash song. I wish that would come back. But this is a nice little option.
Yeah.
I guess if you like flies, I don't know.
It's fun. I mean, the flies are like moving around. They're flying around. I love it. It's great. Something happened. Well, several things happened when we were at MacStock. But one of the things that happened at MacStock was right after, as I checked in, they, you know, did all the normal things. And then they confirmed my mobile phone number. And they're like, great, you're going to get a text from us. Feel free to reply to that text with anything you need while you are here. And I wanted an extra blanket for my bed, so I just texted him one night. But I did it, like, I thought about it while we were at dinner. I was like, oh, right. And they replied right away, and there were a couple of other things I needed to... Actually, we changed our checkout date, and I think both you and I, Pete, did that via the text thing, and I asked for a late checkout and was able to do that. It was fantastic. And it's great for them, too, because it allows all of these things to happen asynchronously so that they can be more efficient with it. And you get to be more efficient. It was great. And so I was like, man, every hotel should do this. I stayed at a lot of Marriott's. I was at a bunch of Marriott's this week. I needed an extra blanket. And I thought, wait a minute. So I launched the Marriott app. Guess what they have in there for your current stay? A way for you to text with the front desk. And it works out great. It's exactly the same. It all works fine. So... If you are a reminder to simply look for these features in either from your hotel, if they're going to text you like the Holiday Inn did in Crystal Lake, or Marriott, it's right there in the app. So
I wish Apple's like little chat feature, corporate chat feature thing was used more widely. Cause when that pops up for like customer service, it's always really, really good. Like that experience is really, really good. Yep. It just feels like a lot of companies never opted in. Like it never really went anywhere. I think it was a great idea, but yeah. It works great with Apple support.
And I get it with the airlines too. I think JetBlue and Delta both use the Apple iMessage support as an option. And I love that too. So Pete, you probably know all this because you travel all the time. So, and I'm going to need you to unmute though, before you start sharing any advice with us, Pete. So, someday Pete will unmute. There it is. Yeah.
I got it. I haven't used it with that when I travel, because generally speaking, we check in under a company thing. So it's not my Bonvoy when I'm in a Marriott or something. So that's a little different.
Makes sense.
When I travel personally, I have not known of this until Crystal Lake Holiday Inn was the first one. Yep. I will use it with Marriott. We're going on vacation in about a week and a half, and So I'll use it there. The other thing that that I wish they would do a better job of, and it's starting to come online more and more, is being able to use your phone as your room key.
Yes.
Yeah. So some hotels are doing that, and that works out well. And that way you don't accidentally put your room key in your pocket with your phone and then have to go to the desk and ask them to recharge it.
Right. Well, a lot of the room keys now are NFC, and so the magnets and all that stuff don't cause a problem. Yeah. But yeah, for sure. Yep.
But that's always frustrating.
Another thing.
So you have to go to your desk.
Yeah,
I was gonna say. Hey, so you have to go down to the desk in a hoodie.
In a hoodie, and maybe nothing else.
In the middle of the night.
In the middle of the night. Yep. Don't lock your key in the room in the middle of the night, folks. It's not the best. So. Yep. But I will say, you haven't lived until you've walked through the hotel lobby at 2:36 in the morning wearing nothing but a hoodie. So there's that. Thank goodness for the hoodie. Another thing I noticed while traveling. And it's an app I've used for a while, and they added a feature for me. So, Evgeny, I am so apologetic for how I might mispronounce your name, Evgeny. So, Evgeny Cherpak at Cherpak, CHERPAKE.com. There's all links in the show notes. Makes an app that we've talked about on this show over the years called Remote. And it is remote for Mac. You install an app on your Mac, and then you also install the app on your iPhone. And it lets you remote control things on your Mac, like the TV app, the Plex app, things like that. It was primarily built by Evgeny for himself, so that because he was using a Mac Mini as his interface to his TV, as his set-top box, if you will, and wanted a remote. And he says, I'm lazy. I don't want to get out of bed. And I'm like, yeah, same. And so this app exists. Where I would want to use it most frequently is hotel rooms. The problem is most hotel networks don't allow Wi-Fi devices to see other Wi-Fi devices. And this is a good thing because it would mean that all of the guests at the hotel could just see everybody. And you could set up your own little network and do your own thing. But I talked to Evgeny. I'm like, well, what about like some kind of peer-to-peer thing where it uses even Bluetooth? Because like that would be enough for just like, this will also do screen sharing and all kinds of things. Bluetooth might be terrible for that, but just for sending play, pause, skip, whatever, it should work great. And so that feature is in there now, and I have used it, and it works amazingly well. We were able to watch stuff and pause when we wanted to pause on my phone. One feature in the app, or one setting that I recommend turning on, is the keep your iPhone awake, because the repairing of the whole, you know, Bluetooth between the apps thing takes a little bit of time. And when you want to pause, you want to pause. And presumably if you're sitting there in the hotel, you're probably going to charge your phone soon. So leaving the phone awake for an hour while you're watching a movie or whatever is no problem. It's, you know, it doesn't burn a ton of battery leaving the screen on. So Remote for Mac, I will put all of the links in the show notes. And yeah, it works amazingly well. It's good stuff.
Yep.
Nice. Yep. Yep.
Ooh.
Go. Yeah. What? Yes.
No, I was just saying that's cool.
Yeah, it is. It's this was the first time I was able to use the peer-to-peer features, and I was super stoked. I'm like, wait, I have an answer for this. So
it's a good reminder too that, you know, we're lucky, I think, in the Mac community, because our developer community is generally awesome, I've found. And if you have an idea or something for a feature, I mean, don't pester your developers, but like
suggest,
share stuff. Like if you think of something, yeah. And most of them are very responsive and receptive to either suggestions, you know, always be kind, you know, don't be angry about things. But yeah, if you're kind, I think a lot of developers are very responsive and receptive. And if it's a good idea and they can do it, they might add the feature.
My only issue with this was that I waited years to suggest it. I would, you know, it's the kind of thing I get to my hotel room. It's like, ah, crap, it doesn't work. And then you just sort of deal, because it's presumably this is now going to be relaxing time, like where I'm going to watch a movie or something. And it's like, ah, I don't want to get out my laptop and write an email to the developer. And so it took me years to remember to suggest this to him. And to your point, yes, of course, I was. It was. Hey, I've had this idea. I keep meaning to share. Here's the idea. What do you think about it? And he was like, ah, wait, I have been thinking about this, you know. But yeah, like don't. The corollary to being kind, or this goes along with being kind, is don't be shy. Like, be kind and share these ideas, because the developers, you know, he developed this app for himself and he has his own use cases. And if he doesn't have yours, he can't even know about what you would want to decide whether or not to put it in the app. And so, yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's pretty good. And support your local developers, or your not local, your indie developers. Support all the developers. I mean, apps.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got time.
After, of course, becoming a premium Mac Geek Gab member.
There you go. Attaboy. In our Discord, Randy asked, does anybody have a good alternative to layout from Instagram? I just want a free and simple collage maker. And Enrico shared a cool stuff found called Diptych, D-I-P-T-I-C. It says you get some more preset layouts, but still lots of room to customize position, cropping, and some filtering capabilities are built in. And it's at diptychapp.com, which, of course, now is linked in the show notes. So good stuff.
Yep, I've used it. It's great.
Awesome. Awesome. I have one last one that I'm super excited about because I'm a setup subscriber. Do you guys know what Headway is? Have you ever used this app?
That's new, an audiobook thing, isn't it?
Kind of. You've probably seen ads for Blinkist. Blinkist and Headway are very similar. They take business books, self-help books, generally nonfiction, and create summaries of them so that you can read. You know, Rich
Audio
Dad
Poor Clip Notes.
Yeah, right. Audio Clip Notes. Right. They can play them, but they can also, you can just read them. You can read Rich Dad Poor Dad in 15 minutes while you eat lunch instead of it taking you whatever 4 hours or 3 hours. I mean, it's not that long of a book, but things like that are in there. And I know Blinkist has had CarPlay support for a while. Headway, when I first looked at it 6 months ago, did not. And I was like, oh, but this is where I would want this. Well, I am not sure when they added it, but it now has CarPlay support. And it's awesome because I can go back and forth from reading a little Headway, you know, summary on my phone while I'm eating my lunch. And then if I get in the car, I can just resume it from there. And there is a CarPlay app for it. And it's seamless. It works so well. And it's not... It's actual people reading these things. It's not using speech to text or text to speech kind of thing. It's which would also have been fine. Like, I would have been fine with that, but it's people reading them. So yeah, good stuff. And it is part of setup. Even though it's an iOS app, there's a way to authenticate your setup with Headway and all that stuff. So yeah, fun. We got anything else?
Is there a
go ahead?
Well, okay, so it do you have to, I get that it's book content. How is there a subscription purchase thing that you have to be subscribed to, or where?
Well, yes. And if you're a setup subscriber, you already have it. Otherwise,
it's included in the price.
Yeah. Otherwise you would subscribe directly through Headway. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. It's cool. It's
I'm going to have to check that out.
Absolutely. Yes. It's great.
I just figured there'd be an additional service subscription cost, you know, on top of the app subscription cost, but that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, I mean, not yet. So I'll let you know if that changes. So, yeah.
I'm sometimes amazed at how economics work out, especially with set app. And I'm glad, you know, that it's working for developers, obviously. So yes. Headway wouldn't do the partnership or do it if it wasn't of value to them.
Right.
So that's awesome.
Yes. I agree. Yeah. Yep. And I'm going to make sure it's got to still be in setup because otherwise I couldn't get it. So yes.
Right.
Yep. It's there. Yep.
That just becomes more and more of a value every day.
I know. It's crazy.
Setup.
It's crazy. Yep. I keep telling them they need to
all those individual.
Yep. Yeah. I keep telling them they need to sponsor us and we're proving that they don't because we're going to promote them no matter what. So
right. Why spend money?
Why spend? Get the cow and the milk, man. It's the cow.
Well, I would imagine too that that's what allows them to like continue the service is probably not spending as much on advertising so that they can put that back into what they're doing.
That's fair. Right? Yeah. It yes, and it like it's a great and let me be clear, we will always promote, just like we're doing with Setup, we will always promote things that we like or that you send in and that you folks vouch for. Whether or not someone's paying us has no impact on that.
Right.
Yeah. None whatsoever. They're two separate things. I mean, it's great when we have somebody, you know, I mean, like this episode, we got Fastmail, it's great service. I would and do talk about it when it comes up in the content, regardless of whether they're a sponsor, right? And the same right. obviously is true for Setup. So I just wanted to say it.
I hope you don't mind, Dave. I'll remove it if you want, but I took the liberty of putting my referral link in the Setup. So if you want to get Setup,
sure. I see.
And help Pilot Peak get a free $5 bump.
There you go.
Or a free month or whatever. Yeah. You get something out of it and I get something out of it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yep. So cool. Well, thanks for hanging out with us, folks. We have come to the end yet again. Happy birthday again, Adam.
Oh, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Also,
another trip around the sun.
That's it. Keep going round and round. Thanks to CashFly for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. Go check out Pete's other show, So There I Was, for aviation enthusiasts. I do two other shows, one called Gig Gab for musicians, another called Business Brain for entrepreneurs. Make sure you check out our sponsors, fastmail.com/MGG. You can see all of Matt Geekab's current sponsors as well as deals from current and previous sponsors at mattgeekab.com/sponsors. I think it's also at mattgeekab.com/deals if you want to type less. You can click on it on the mattgeekab.com site. Feedback@mattgeekab.com is where you can send in all your feedback. So please
hold on.
That too.
Was that feedback@mattgeekab.com?
Yep, feedback@mattgeekab.com.
Wow, we almost missed that.
Woo! So close. So close. But we didn't miss it. And you want to know why we didn't miss it, Pete? It's because
we didn't get caught.
That's why.
Don't
made on a Mac.
See ya.
Later.